especially for you. So if you like hot sauce, you'll love Great White Hot Sauce. It's the hot sauce that bites back. Find it at www.trygreatwhite.com. Sometimes on this podcast, we cover topics that are easy. Sometimes we cover topics that are hard. Sometimes we cover topics that are technical, and other times not so technical. And then there's a topic like this, which is near impossible. On this episode, we're going to tell you what our 10 favorite David Bowie songs are. Remember, this ain't rock and roll. This is genocide. That's a Diamond Dogs reference. Enjoy the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
The KOFB studio presents Milk Crates and Turntables, a music discussion podcast hosted by Scott McLean with his co-host, Jack Calabrese. Now, let's talk music. Enjoy the show.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Amanda, as usual. Welcome to the podcast. You know the name of it, so I'm not going to say it because you're either watching it or listening to it. Right now, we're streaming live over Facebook and YouTube. And I'll say up front, if you like the podcast, share it, tell a friend, give it a rating, give it a comment. You can contact us at milkcratesandturntables@gmail.com. I know that's a long email name, but if you want to get in touch with us, we're always willing to listen to suggestions, criticisms, anything of the sort. Just reach out. And tonight's topic, it's not an easy one. This is one of our tougher ones, I think. At least for me, it was. It's our, meaning my list and Jack's list, favorite, our top 10 David Bowie songs. Think about that. There's so many. How do you pick 10? But this doesn't mean they're the best Bowie songs. It's my favorite and Jack's favorite 10. So, it's, you know, if you don't like it, let us know. You can contact us at milkcratesandturntables@gmail.com. Did I already say that? Yeah. As my nose itches live. Anyways, without further ado, let me bring on my co-host, a man who thinks Suffragette City is a real place. My co-host, my buddy, the guy that drives me effing crazy sometimes, but I love him, Mr. Jack Calabrese. I can hear your gums, literally, your gums flapping.
How are you?
What's up, buddy, who drives me crazy, but I still love you, Jack.
How do I drive you crazy?
You keep me like...
How?
Look, what time are we starting, Jack?
8 o'clock.
It's you. Unless your watch stopped at 8 o'clock. Anyways,
but that's okay. To start at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, you're supposed to. There you go. How's things? I'll wait for you.
Things are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things are good. Things are crazy. I mean, you know, work is busy, and you know, the painting thing is busy, and going to shows is, you know, busy, and you know, hopefully we're coming out of the whole COVID thing, so things are going to get busier. We just booked a trip to Greece. I got to travel for work. It's nuts right now.
It's live nuts. A chaotic life. And then on this side of the screen, I get up every morning. I drink my iced coffee by the pool.
How many sugars?
Actually, I don't put that many in there. As much as I used to when I was working. But enough of that. Top 10 David Bowie songs.
Are we getting right into it?
I mean, you know what? This is insane. This I found was insane. And I think we might have covered this, right? But from 1970 to 1980, David Bowie did The Man Who Sold the World in 1970, 71 Hunky Dory, 72 The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, 73 Aladdin Sane, 73 Pinups, 74 Diamond Dogs, 74 David Live at the Tower in Philadelphia, 75 Young American, 76 Station to Station, 77 Low, 77 Heroes, 78 Stage, 79 Lodger, and 80 Scary Monsters. Dude, think that is insane talent, right? I mean, 8 out of those albums are classics.
Yeah. You know what? We've had this conversation a number of times about a number of different bands in terms of people having their creative arc, right? You know, the Stones with Let It Bleed and Exile on Main Street and Sticky Fingers, and, you know, the Zeppelin had their creative arc, and even U2 had their creative arc, and Elton John had their creative arc. Bowie's was pretty long, pretty lengthy. I mean,
14 albums in 10 years.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah.
But that's the way that the music business used to be. You know,
yeah, I mean,
musicians were working musicians, and they were driven by the record company. The record company wanted product.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was putting it out, man. I mean, that's a quite an accomplishment. I don't know many bands that could put out 14 albums in 10 years, even when that is what they wanted. The record companies,
I mean,
right?
For me, and no disrespect to the ones that came before or after, but I look at Bowie's real creative arc as starting with Ziggy Stardust and ending with Heroes. I just think that run was just unbelievable. And again, you know, great stuff before and great stuff after, but just that run of Ziggy, Aladdin Sane, Diamond Dogs, Young American, Station to Station, Low and Heroes, holy crap.
So you have the three, they call it the trilogy, the German trilogy.
The Berlin.
In Berlin, he did three albums in there. You had Station to Station in 76, Low in 77, and Heroes in 77. All three were done in Germany, and all three. They you can tell they all have that kind of same sound. You know, he wasn't one for, he always changed it up. But those three are pretty consistent with that sound.
Yeah. Well, the reason why he was in Germany, do you know the reason why?
No, not offhand.
He had to escape Los Angeles. He had to escape the United States. When he first started Station to Station, I think that they were claiming that David Bowie was all of 80 pounds. 80 pounds.
Well, Station to Station is when he started his Thin White Duke persona.
Thin White Duke.
Yeah, that's where he jumped off.
He was eating red peppers, drinking, and doing a hell of a lot of cocaine. So he literally had to sever his friendships. He was running around at the time with John Lennon and Harry Nilsson and Keith Moon. And he got the hell out of there and had to sever those relationships and ran to Germany to kind of get himself clean.
He recorded Station to Station there. And he said years later, he did so much coke, he doesn't even recall the sessions. He has really no memories of them, which is insane.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a lot of coke.
That's a lot of coke.
But I mean, you know, you talk about him having the run that he had. You know, David Bowie over his career recorded over 400 songs, 26 albums. Surprised to read that his biggest hit, you know, I thought it may have actually come off of, you know, Let's Dance was such a popular record, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan being on it and MTV staple, but his biggest hit was actually Fame.
Off of Young Americans.
So Fame was his biggest hit, which was number one for 2 weeks and then on the charts for another 21. But he's sold collectively 140 million albums across the world.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yes. That's why he was
so sad that he's gone.
I know. And we're lucky we got to see him.
We did get to see him. I got to see him.
We went together, actually, I think, didn't we?
The first time, yeah, on the Sirius Moonlight Tour.
At Sullivan Stadium, the old stadium where the Patriots used to play, it was a rainy day. We caravaned from Winthrop. There must have been 20 of us at least, as usual. We were like, we literally were like hooligans back then, before the word hooligans was put into that type of situation. And if I remember correctly, I got in a fight down on the field. Imagine that. But aside from that, I know. Shocking. I know. If I remember correctly, it was pouring out. We had trash bags. We had partied at John McCarthy's house beforehand.
Yes, we did.
Took off from there. It's pouring rain the whole way there. It's pouring rain. I don't even know who was backup. Did he have a backup band? Do you remember?
I don't remember. If he had a backup band, we didn't see him.
We didn't see it. So as it's pouring and we got trash bags over us with the face ripped open, the sun all of a sudden pops through, right? It just kind of comes through in this helicopter. You see the helicopter coming in over the stadium. And it was bringing Bowie in. It was like God came into the stadium. Yep. And then it didn't rain for the rest of the show.
No, it was cleared.
Yeah, it was a great show. Yeah,
they were unbelievable in their goofy costumes up there.
Oh, that was quite a spectacle. Yes, we'll get to that. So we're going to do the top 10, and I'm going to start. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean, for the people that are listening, that these are his best songs. We're not saying top 10 best Bowie songs. This is my top 10 list, and Jack has his top 10 list. So they're not going to be maybe what you think. So I'm going to start off with, and again, these aren't in any particular order. This is just how I have them, because it's impossible to put them in any order. That I can't do from 1 to 10. But this one is the second cut off of my favorite David Bowie album, and I think a very underrated David Bowie album that people should go out and listen to again, and you'll be amazed at how good it really is. From 1975, Young Americans, the album, but the song is called Win. It's the second song on the album. And it is, I mean, that is just such a soulful album. That was just, and that song just breathes it. It just breathes soul. I love that song.
It's a great song.
It is.
It's a great song. And Young American is his homage to, you know, American soul and, you know, the Philly sound and, you know, Motown and all of that. And Win is a beautiful, great kind of funky soul. It's a
beautiful song. Yeah. A lot of sax on that album.
Totally ripped off by Beck.
I wouldn't know because I didn't listen to Beck.
So Beck has it wasn't a big hit for him, but he's got a song called Deborah.
Okay.
That is a great song, but you listen to it and you're like, oh my God, this is plagiarism at its best.
Yeah. The Young American album, some people called it Plastic Soul. Some called it Blue Eyed Soul, but to go from Diamond Dogs, Ziggy Stardust, Diamond Dogs, Aladdin Sane, and then just do a total 180 and jump into this is just crazy. And he pulled it off. I remember seeing him on Soul Train singing Young Americans. And I think he sang Fame. He sang two songs, I think. I just remember Young Americans, though. Yeah, David Bowie and Elton John were the only two white guys I ever saw sing on Soul Train. Yeah. All right, give me a song.
So one of my favorites, probably not his most popular, much like you, but maybe a little bit more well-known than Win. One of my absolute favorite songs by David Bowie, and probably one of the longer intros out there, is Sound and Vision.
Sound and Vision? Yeah, that's, hey.
None
of these songs are bad. Like, we're not going to have a disagreement tonight because none of these songs are bad.
That means it's going to be a boring show.
That's okay. I'm sure you'll nitpick something and provoke me again. That's okay, though.
I would never do such a thing.
No, you don't.
In any event, you know, sound and vision, you know, for those of you that haven't heard it, and I'm sure that some of you probably haven't heard it, it has got to be a 2 or 3 minute intro.
Yeah.
And it's not a terribly long song, but there's great, just great rhythm track up front. I've always loved that song. And my wife always says, she was like, why that song? And I was like, I don't know. It just speaks to me. It's not, you know, one of the crazy popular songs, you know, it's just my little piece of the world.
I have one of those songs on my list that you might go, really? But it's just one of those songs, like you just said. My second song is a song that was on both Diamond Dogs and David Live at the Tower in Philadelphia, which was his first live album, his first real live album. I love that album. It's kind of raw. I've had people listen to it and they're like, the sound quality's shitty, but I loved it. I played. Now, remember, I told you this a long time ago, I was listening to David Bowie when I was 10 years old, 11 years old. And David Live at the Tower is one of my favorite albums of all time. And the song is Sweet Thing, right? Sweet Thing. And I prefer the live version on David Live at the Tower, although the Diamond Dogs version is also done very well. So Live at the Tower is an interesting album because you're catching him in the transition from Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane in his glam rock era to Young Americans, Diamond Dogs, and then Young Americans, right? So he played the first half of the tour was more Diamond Dogs type tour, and then while he was doing that, he recorded that album live in Philadelphia, but he was also recording a bunch of the tracks from Young Americans. So the second half of that tour, and I think it was probably in 75, they renamed it the Soul Tour. So that was like, you saw the transition happening right in front of you live. And if you ever get a chance to listen to it, it's called Sweet Thing. It's off the Diamond Dogs album, or David Live at the Tower. I still love every song on that album.
Yeah,
and it's got a lot of mixes in it. It's got a little bit of Diamond Dogs, a little bit of Young Americans, a little bit of Aladdin Sane, a little bit of Ziggy. So that was kind of his last, really cleaned up the Ziggy Stardust glam rock part of his career.
I mean, you know, this may be an area where you and I disagree a little bit. And I think that David Live is a good document of like where he was, but I don't think that in his career that they ever captured David Bowie on, you know, an album where he should have had a monster great live album. And I don't think he ever did. I think David Live is fine. But to, you know, to your point, I don't think that the production is that great.
I said it's not the best quality sound. It's kind of raw.
I just said that you said that.
You said you tend to disagree with me on something. So.
No, what I tend to disagree with you is I'm not sure that David Bowie throughout his career, even after that, they actually put out a really great live album.
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. Yeah. So there's no disagreement there. But you do see the transition. Like they said, they actually split the tour in half and renamed the second half of the tour because he wanted to start doing Young American songs. Yeah. So, all right, Sweet Thing, 1974. What's yours?
So I am actually going to go with a little-known tune off of Hunky Dory called Oh, You Pretty Thing.
Ah.
Great, great song. A little bit of a deeper cut.
That's a deep cut.
I'd give it a deep cut. But it's a great song. Definitely a little bit more raw. Definitely a little bit, you know, on the younger side. But you know, just a great song. And that's, you know, one of the cool things about doing this show and you and I kind of wanting to, or even out of necessity, to do a little bit of research, it's good to kind of go back and listen to some of the things. I don't know if you did the same, but I, on Spotify, and this is one of the great things about today's technology, was able to, you know, look at, there are lists, there are playlists on Spotify of, you know, David Bowie's 25 greatest songs, but there's also David Bowie's greatest hidden cuts or deep cuts or whatnot. And that's where I was reminded this week of that song.
That's interesting. I pretty much do my music listening on Amazon Music. Spotify occasionally, probably number two, but mostly I listen to Amazon. So
that's any particular reason why? I mean, is it just six of one, half dozen of another?
I guess I'm just comfortable with Amazon. Plus, I'm paying for it through Amazon Prime. So I want to get my money. But you get into one specific platform and you get used to it, right? I mean, I like Spotify too. I like the personal playlists that Spotify offers. You know, like there's like six or seven Milk Crates and Turntables playlists on Spotify, which I like that. That's you can't really do that on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess the one thing that I would like to know about Amazon is, you know, do they have a different kind of like file format? Is the sound quality better than it is on Spotify?
I don't really notice. Yeah, I don't really notice. It's just... just the platform is like, if I type in David Bowie, it gives me albums, songs, videos. It gives you a whole list of different things that you might want to look for. And you hit songs and it says, it'll offer you up like six songs. It says more. You hit the more and it just drops them. It's not like everything. But David Live at the Tower is not on Amazon Music, which is, I found interesting.
That's kind of weird. I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. But
that makes no sense to me. No sense whatsoever.
So my number three is it's a pretty well known song. Should be played more on the radio, but isn't. From 1973, the Aladdin Sane album. Probably, I might arguably say this might be one of the best intro songs he ever had. Panic in Detroit. The intro on that is instant, right? That guitar riff
is dunk, dunk, dunk.
It just gets you right away. It's instant. Yeah. As soon as you hear that, boom. And it doesn't stop from there. I mean, the opening line, looking like he's Che Guevara driving in a diesel van. I love that. I don't know why I love that line.
Yeah.
I love that.
He was such a creative writer and, you know, he really pushed the boundaries and he always pushed the boundaries. He was always looking for something different, not one to ever really rest on his laurels.
Yeah.
And like a lot of, like a lot of bands, I mean, he went through that phase where I think it was back in 75 that he was like, that's it. He was like, you know, I'm tired of being a human jukebox. He was like, I'm quitting the music business.
Yeah.
So he quit. He quit touring, he quit recording, and he quit for 5 months.
Can't stay out of the spotlight.
5 months.
He was a dominant figure in the 70s.
He was a dominant figure in the early 80s. I mean, look, the Let's Dance album was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know, I mean, you know, that you think about it. I mean, David Bowie, after being around all throughout the 70s, was still, you know, filling stadiums. And not only did he fill stadiums in 83 on the Sirius Moonlight Tour, but then he did the Glass Spider Tour in 84 or 85. And then a little bit later, probably closer to 87, 88, somewhere in there, he did that kind of like greatest hits tour where he was retiring his songs and he was never going to play them again.
Yeah. And he did a remake of Fame. He did a remake of Fame.
Yeah.
Kind of a funky version.
Yeah, it actually wasn't bad.
It's not bad. No, it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Fame 90? Yeah.
Fame 90, yeah.
Yeah.
The video with the blonde dancing around him.
Yeah. You know, there's not a lot of artists that actually can pull off remakes. Most of them are terrible.
Yeah, that's true.
And that one was different enough, but still had enough of the original quality that it was really kind of interesting, and it was well-produced. It was really good.
Yeah. Yep. All right, what do you got?
But, you know, once you got a little bit deeper into the 80s and whatnot, did you fall off with Bowie?
I did. There was so much going on, right? I mean, after Let's Dance, there was Tonight was the name of the album. Tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
That came out in 84. And I liked that. But after that, there was just so much going on.
Well, he was searching as well. Right. So, you know, he did the couple of records after, Let's Dance. And then he wanted to be in a band. So, you know, he formed Tin Machine in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
Which was one of the worst concerts I've ever been to in my entire life.
Tin Machine should have went into the recycle machine.
Yeah, it was not good.
No.
It was an attempt to do something a little bit different where he wasn't necessarily in the spotlight and whatnot, but it was not great.
Then he mixed up with Trent Reznor.
Never mind, not great. It wasn't even good.
Then he recorded I'm Afraid of Americans with Trent Reznor. He was trying to get, you know, like in with the 90s type.
Well, that's
Nine Inch Nails was pretty big in the early 90s.
Yeah, so they had that tour that they went out, you know, together. But, you know, that's what happens to some of these artists is, you know, you get to a point where you're trying desperately to stay relevant and you're trying to explore new things. And I think you kind of get caught up in this weird thing in that your older fans want you to play the old music. They don't want to hear anything new. They want to hear Fame. They want to hear Young Americans, right? You know, they want to hear Space Oddity. In the younger generation, they don't want to listen to this old guy trying to play their music.
That's, you know, Morrissey. Morrissey sings more of his songs than Smith songs. And he says, I'm not an oldies act. I have new music. I have new material. And he only plays like three, maybe four Smith songs in a show. So,
yeah,
I know what you mean. You know what?
I have to say, you know, I mean, Morrissey, you know, Elvis Costello, there are a bunch of artists that insist on really playing everything in their catalog. And I get it, you know, to a certain extent. But I also get that concert tickets are expensive. And there are some people out there that want to hear Changes versions 1 and 2.
Yeah.
You know, they want to hear the greatest hits record. They don't want to hear, you know,
like David the idiot Bowie. Behind me at the Radiohead concert in Miami. Is he going to play Creep? Why aren't they playing Creep? He just wouldn't shut the fuck up. I almost told him, shut the fuck up. They're not going to play Creep, okay? And they didn't. But he just kept yelling, they're going to play Creep.
Did you say anything to him?
No, I was with my wife. I didn't want to get her upset.
You're maturing. Hey, does the Good Doctor, is she a Radiohead fan?
Well, she liked the concert. She's heard a couple of their songs. She loved the concert. Yeah. And it's a great concert to see. It's definitely not boring.
Well, you know, getting back to like David Bowie and his concerts. So, you know, you have Mark Smith that just, he just put a comment up saying, saw Bowie in 1990 at Giant Stadium on the Sound and Vision Tour, a minimal band with Adrian Belew on guitar, awesome show, and only Bowie would downsize for a stadium tour. And Mark really touches upon something that is, really kind of cool, is that he always had just a killer band with, you know, Earl Slick and Carlos Alomar. You know, when I saw him on the Glass Spider tour, he actually had Peter Frampton playing lead. I think Earl Slick was playing for him when we saw him in 83. But Adrian Belew and Reeves Gabrels and Mick Ronson back in the day, he always had a killer band. And he was one of those guys that really, really appreciated and had a real talent for finding amazing, amazing guitar players.
Yeah. All right, what do you got for a song?
So I'm going to go with an obvious one. You know, probably my top three David Bowie songs is Life on Mars.
Okay, I have that on my list. Yeah, that was actually the next one I was going to say. But Life on Mars, what can you say? Hunky Dory, right? In 1971, Hunky Dory.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing for me on Life on Mars is I didn't really find that song until much, much later. For whatever reason, it got past me.
Hunky Dory was it's a good album, but by the time you were listening to him, I'm assuming it was Ziggy Stardust time, right? And you never really look back. It's always when you get that, you always look forward. You know, what's the next album? Very rarely do people hit and then they say, you know what, I'm going to go back and look at the four albums he put out before this.
But it's such a great song. And, you know, I'm surprised that I never even stumbled upon it, like, you know, listening to WBCN or,
yeah,
you know, WCOZ or even WFNX, you know, some of the big stations in the Boston area.
That was the first album he wrote on the piano instead of a guitar. And it shows in that song. Yeah. And that's actually when he assembled the Spiders from Mars. Mick Ronson, Trevor Boulder, and Mick Woodmansey. And he recorded the album with them. So he wanted to put something behind him, like you just said. He wanted to get something, and he picked some good musicians.
Always.
In that one, yeah.
Except for the guys in Tin Machine.
Yeah. But Hunky Dory's good album, Life on Mars, fantastic song.
I think if I were to look at, you know, my Spotify playlist and I looked at all of the David Bowie songs that I play, you know, in the past 10 years, that's got to be number one for me. I play that song a lot.
Now, you said something about, I remember a story you told me about a friend of yours tried to do that at a karaoke or something. Was that you?
I don't think that was me.
You had a friend that was someone was singing, trying to do Life on Mars in a karaoke.
I don't think that was me, but that's a brave person right there trying to pull that song off.
You better have some pipes on you. So you know what I'm curious? How many? So that's the first one that we've matched up on, right?
So. Well, kind of. I had Win on my list as well.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So I'm gonna go with. And this is an obvious, and it's still a great song. I'll listen to it every time it comes on. From Ziggy Stardust, 1972, Moon Age Daydream. It's a great song. Yep. And it's also good on David Live at the Tower in Philadelphia.
Bad sound production.
But it's good. For some reason, I like that raw sound. I really was appealing to me.
Sure.
You know,
I get that.
Plus, I was listening to him. My father never gave us crappy stereos. Like, we had a pair of Harman Kardon headphones. I had no idea what, like, the value of those things were. It was just
more valuable now.
All these things. And they're like monitors, like what I'm wearing now. You hear every little sound in them, you know? So maybe that's why I appreciated it that much more. But I just love that album. And Moon Age Daydream, you know?
Yeah.
Who doesn't like that song? That's what I would like to know.
I bet you that there's a lot of our listeners that don't even know that song.
Well, I think, isn't that in Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think it is.
Yeah. It's a great soundtrack, by the way. That is a fantastic, the first album. They tried to duplicate it with the second. Now, the first soundtrack is good. Anyways, moving on. What do you got?
So my next pick may be somewhat controversial, but I'm gonna say it anyway because it is a Bowie song. Technically, is All the Young Dudes.
Okay, I was just listening to that earlier. His version. That is one of those songs. That's like All Along the Watchtower. Jimi Hendrix does it 10 times better than Bob Dylan. Mata Hoople does All the Young Dudes 10 times, 100 times better than Bowie does.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you're just looking for a fight. If you would disagree,
no.
Because Mata Hoople made that they cut their teeth on that song.
I can't, you know, but there's a couple of live versions of Bowie doing All the Young Dudes, which are great,
right?
But from a studio and production standpoint, can you hear the?
Is that it? Is that the train?
Shh.
Dead air. Waiting for a train.
Yeah, maybe you can't hear it. The windows are closed. I'm on.
Yeah, because it's wintertime. Scott, the IT guy, has joined us tonight. Scott, before you decide to log off, because he's random, leave my outro, will you? You've been letting me down.
He doesn't even know who David Bowie is.
Yeah. He said his thing is new needs to be tracks released after 2010. Okay. Anyway, so All the Young Dudes, right?
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, to a certain extent, I was trying to avoid some of the obvious ones.
Yeah.
Which is virtually impossible to do.
Well, if you're into the, like I said, you said, if you're into the deep cuts, you know, and you're a Bowie fan, you're not just a casual listener. People like you and me are going to find these songs that other people probably, when they bought the Young Americans album, they listened to Young Americans, they listened to Fame, and maybe one other song on the album, you know? And again, if you haven't listened to Young Americans, now that you're an adult, the people that are listening, go back and listen to that album. You will not be disappointed. You will not be disappointed. It's such a crossover from what he did before that. No glam rock on that album. All right, so I'm going to go. Did I just go or did you just go?
I just went with All the Young Dudes.
All right. I'm going to go with from the Station to Station album, 1976. Like I said, this is when Bowie changed his persona to the Thin White Duke. Another song with a great intro, Stay.
It's great too.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't really, they wouldn't know the name of it if they heard it on the radio. Let's put it that way. But they've probably heard it.
It's not a song that's on the radio very often.
A lot. It was back in the day, and then it wasn't. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But it's a great song. Now, like I said, another good intro song.
Do you actually have a favorite David Bowie non-live at the Paramount album? Do you have a favorite David Bowie studio album?
Your hand is over your mouth. I can't really hear you. Somebody. Fuck you. Roxanne, fuck you. Didn't we do that one show? Do I have a particularly favorite David Bowie song, like of all time?
No, not song. Oh. Album.
Young Americans.
That's it?
And then it would be Diamond Dogs after Young Americans, then Diamond Dogs. Yeah.
So you being a vinyl collector, you know, speaking of Diamond Dogs, have you tried to find the original version?
Can't find it anywhere. The original cover.
It's worth a lot of money.
The original cover.
Do you want to tell our friends out there about the original cover?
Yeah, if you see the cover of Diamond Dogs, it's David Bowie. It's a very like artistic version of him on the front, and he's kind of on his elbows, and he's got the red hair pulled back, and you see his body. He's kind of laying down, and from right to left, his head. Then you go to his body, and when you open the gatefold, transitions into a dog's body, like a greyhound type body. Well, the original cover had the dog's genitals showing. And, you know, back then in the 70s, although you could have Led Zeppelin with little children with no shirts on Houses of the Holy, I guess that was okay. But a dog's genitals, like people hit the roof. So they pulled it and put out the one that most everybody has where it's just, there's nothing there.
Yeah. It's a highly collectible.
Yeah.
Very, very hard to find. I think it's worth a couple of grand.
That's where I tell people. They all, and I've said this before, you've heard me say this, nobody's getting rich off their vinyl collection. They're not like baseball cards. People hang on to them, and they won't play them. They won't even look at them, but they're like, I have vinyl records. They're not going to make you any money. You see these, you go into these antique stores, and there's a, I'll say like a Houses of the Holy Led Zeppelin, and they want $60 for it, and the thing is in like mediocre condition. Because they think it's vinyl. It's Led Zeppelin. Vinyl's hot now. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but you know the biggest.
You know what I'm talking about. You know what
I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, and yeah. And there are two artists in particular. Oh, I've got all the original Beatles stuff. I was like, so did a million other people.
Yeah.
So did a million other people, right? So yeah. So it's you know the big ones are the Beatles. And the other one was like, even my dad, oh, I have all the original Elvis 45s. I was like, yeah, they were all scratched to shit, number one. And okay, you know, Heartbreak Hotel sold, what, 1.5 million copies? There's 1.5 million of them floating around somewhere.
Very few, and probably less 45s than albums are worth anything. You know?
Yeah. You know,
there are some expensive 45s out there. But
there are definitely very, very expensive Beatle records and very expensive Elvis Presley records. But most people don't have those. They have the version that they bought at Woolworths or Sears or the Singing Cricket.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's, you know, and it's the run of the mill one where they had, you know, multiple pressings and whatnot. You know, you got to look for those oddball things like, you know, the Diamond Dogs covers, which is not something you see very often, that they pulled pretty quickly. So there's not a lot of them out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Get smart, people.
That's right. All right. What do you got?
So I'm going to go a little bit later and one of my favorite songs off of the Let's Dance album is China Girl. Mm. I love that song. And I like the Iggy Pop version of it. And I also like the acoustic version of it.
Yeah. It's a good song. Don't get me wrong. It's a good song. But it's just, I think it's been, and again, this is just me. It's your choice, not mine. I think there's better songs than that. That one is just killed to death. It's played to death. It's like one of those songs, yeah. I won't listen to it. It hasn't made a resurgence in my playlist, as you would say.
But here's the thing. I don't think it's played nearly as much as it was. I think you're right that, you know, back in the 80s, they killed it.
Yeah, it's a good song. I'm not arguing. I'm not going to say it's a shitty song. I like the song. I do. You know what? I have one of those songs, and I'll give it to you right now. And you might say the same thing about that. For some reason, I love this song. from 1984's Tonight album, Blue Jean. I love that song.
You're right.
I knew it. See, I knew it. I said I had one song in there. You might go, I love that song. Sometimes I feel like.
I don't know. You know, to me, Blue Jean was kind of a throwaway song for him. You know, I mean, it's not that creative. I don't know. I thought it was, you know, especially coming in after, after Let's Dance, which was such a monster hit, and then that next record was
actually that album. He stayed in the same type of sound. If you listen to that album and you listen to Let's Dance, because he caught a new audience, which very rarely does an older artist have that opportunity. So his game plan was, I'll make another album that sounds something like Let's Dance to keep them hooked, you know. And so, again, Tonight isn't really a great album, but I love that song, Blue Jean. I just met a girl named Blue Jean. I sound just like him.
You sound
just like him.
Exactly like him.
Sometimes on, get, I feel me, like.
There you go. That's what I want to hear. It's not a bad tune, but it's not my favorite. To me, it seems like it's a leftover from the Let's Dance sessions.
Yes, so's China Girl.
China Girl was actually written before. Remember, it was.
I know. I'm just saying.
Why remember, do people it was say first that? Released by Iggy Pop.
Why do people say that? I'm just saying. Why do people say that? Ah, oh, you didn't know. I'm just saying.
Hey, it's Ryan Ziza.
Yay. All right, so I gave you my throwaway.
So, one of my other favorite songs is Fashion.
That's a good song.
Okay. A little different, you know, kind of in that zone. You know, Fame, it was a little bit odd. It was, you know, I think one of the reasons why I really liked about that song, it was really different. It wasn't like anything else that was out on the radio at that time. It was kind of dark. It kind of had, you know, weird lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, it had like
the sound in it. The music was kind of distorted and some reverb in there.
It just had weird breaks to it. And
yeah,
it was just kind of funky. Right. I mean, it was really, really out there.
Good song. I'm going to go with From Aladdin Sane and David Live at the Tower in Philadelphia, which I actually like the David Live version of Cracked Actor.
Cracked Actor is a great tune.
Cracked Actor. And if I remember correctly, when we saw him, the Serious Moonlight Tour, he used to do it. He'd put on this little act. He'd have a like an Elvis, you know, with the cape. Someone would come out. He'd be holding a skull in his hand. He was very. He had a lot of. He loved those stage performances, right?
He did that on the Glass Spider tour.
Yeah, when we saw him, if I remember correctly, a giant skull was rolled out onto the stage. It was not bigger than him, but it was a big skull, probably up to his waist, and they rolled it out on the stage.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but there's a lot about that night.
There's a lot about that night we don't remember. Yeah, so Cracked Actor.
You know the one thing that I do remember about that night. So you know you talk about us being hooligans, and you talk about you getting in a fight. But I remember one of the ways that we kind of moved up toward the stage was we were making pretend we were fighting each other. So I don't want to clear a crowd.
Yeah.
I don't want to say who was doing it, but you know, one person would push.
Yeah.
And then the other person would push the other guy toward the stage, but really push him.
And then everyone would just kind of split. The sea would open. You
know, move up. Like we got up close.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, absolutely.
It was as bad as we always did. It was bad concert etiquette.
We never had good concert etiquette. I know you know as well as I do. You weren't going to stop me from getting to the front of to the stage at a show. Very rarely did I stay in my assigned seat.
No,
I always had to make the effort. Yeah. How about stepping over the seats in front of you, just pushing the people out of the way and just stepping from row to row, stepping over seats, pushing people.
So there was a show that me and a buddy of mine went to at the Garden. And our seats were fine, you know, but they were up in the loge. And I was like, look, there's two empty seats in the second row. So we snuck down onto the floor and everybody was standing. The show had already started. Right. So everybody was standing up in front of their seats.
Yeah.
So I was like, dude, just follow me. And I was kind of balancing going from chair to chair.
Yeah. You know, that ain't easy.
About 12 in, I misjudged one and went a little too far back and the chair flipped up and my leg went through and landed on the foot of the woman that was in the row before. She punched me in the leg and I looked back toward like, where was my friend? And he was standing there with like a 400-pound you know, security guard who was just, give me the finger, like, get back here. So I had to skulk back. And everybody around was laughing because it was just a...
That was not easy doing that. You had to keep, especially when you're drunk. All right.
Yeah.
I had cracked actor.
Who said I was drunk?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I said cracked actor. What do you got?
So I will actually go with, just to change it up just a little bit, as I'm actually going to go back to the Let's Dance album and do the theme from Cat People, Putting Out Fire.
With gasoline. Like that song? I'm on tonight.
I used to like it.
I'm on tonight.
I'm taking that song off my list now.
I think the movie had Natasha Kinski in it.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. Yep. When she was hot. Now I like that song. I always liked that song. That's a good song.
It's a great tune.
It's a nice slow build.
Yeah.
You know,
but it's pretty intense. Pretty intense song. You know, great backing vocals.
The movie didn't have much legs. It's not. It didn't age well.
It's not a great. Right. It's not.
But
a great
the song movie. Did.
Yeah, the song's great, and it's probably been used in a bunch of other productions. You know, either movies or whatnot.
Yeah,
great tune.
All right, I'm gonna jump into an obvious. It's an obvious from 1974. Diamond Dogs, the song.
Mm.
Great song.
Yeah.
Good intro, good build up to it. That's when he does, what's the name of that when he ends it with, this ain't rock and roll, this is genocide, right? Yeah. There's a name of that. I forget the name of it, but he talked, it's like a speaking thing. Fleas the size of rats, suck on rats the size of cats, and 10,000 humanoids roaming the streets.
You're talking about,
it's called Legend, something for Legend or something like that.
Yeah.
Something Legend. Yeah, right before on the Diamond Dogs album, right before Diamond Dogs, there's that whole, he wanted to do an album based on 1984, but George Orwell's estate wouldn't let him. So he created Diamond Dogs instead.
He does have the song 1984.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you can name a song 1984. And actually his tour that transition tour that I talked about, he had a giant, giant stage set. It was called Hunger City. And that was supposed to represent Diamond Dogs in the post-apocalyptic world. He said it was a pretty big stage show.
But. What do you think about, you know, David Bowie knowing that he was actually going to pass and making sure that he put out that last record, the Dark Star album? Have you ever listened to that record?
I've listened to it. Not frequently. Not a lot. I listened to it.
It's a heavy record, but that is a great, great album.
Well, didn't Warren Zevon did the same thing?
He did.
Yeah. I mean, you might as well, if you know you're going, there's no turning back, why not? Why not put out an album?
I mean, but, you know, Bowie worked right up until the end.
Yeah, he was actually, there was some sort of play that was going on that he was backing it or something. And one of his last appearances was he came to watch the rehearsal. And they got a footage of him coming in, and it was for some documentary, and that was it. He really didn't. Yeah, he was definitely the thin white Duke. Yeah. That's for sure.
So let me ask you this. In terms of, you know, great David Bowie songs, would you include Under Pressure in there?
No.
Why?
I fucking hate that song.
Why do you hate that song?
Just don't think it's a good song.
It's a great song.
It's not.
Yes, it is. It's David Bowie. It's Queen. It's back and forth.
I was never a huge Queen fan, by the way. I mean, I liked them. I was never a huge.
It's got a great riff and a great bass line that was.
Yeah, they stole the bass line from Vanilla Ice, by the way.
Oh yeah, they stole it. How about Vanilla Ice? Right. So.
Yeah.
Here we go. Under Pressure. Doom 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 doom, and then his initial defense was, look, Queen's version is doom 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 doo doom doom. Doom 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 doo doom. He was like, my version is doom 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 doo doom 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 doo doom doom. It's
yeah, like has a like a hi hat in it. He goes, it's different. It's different.
It's different. It's different. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. He made a lot of money off that. Fuck you. He made a lot of money. He had to give a lot of that money to now that was on a Queen album, right?
It was on Queen's Greatest Hits. I don't think it was on any other Queen album.
It wasn't on a Bowie album.
No. It was not. I'm surprised that you dislike it as much as you do. But you just
I liked it when it first came out. It was different. It was good. But then again, overplayed. Way overplayed than just beyond overplayed.
Yeah. We don't have time to dive into the details, but my understanding is it was not a very good working relationship, those guys doing that. You know, there's a bit of a power struggle between Freddie Mercury and David Bowie in terms of the creative direction of the song. I don't think that either side thought it was a very good experience.
Bowie has a habit of doing that. He did that with Morrissey, and I think I told you the story. Morrissey was on tour with him. Morrissey was like 91, I think. The Smiths had just broke up. He was at his gigantic point in his career. And he opened up for Bowie, and it seemed like most of the crowd was there to see Morrissey. And Morrissey would do his final song, and the place would go nuts. And then, you know, there's a thing, and Bowie would come out, you know, when it was his turn. So Bowie, about, I don't know, almost halfway through the tour, decides he doesn't like that Morrissey's getting all these accolades from the fans. And he says, how about if we do this? And there's a video of it. And that he says, you'll sing this song, then I'll come out halfway through, and then I'll help you finish the song, and then you just walk off the stage and I take over. Robbing Morrissey of his encore or his final song of the night. So Morrissey basically said, after like three times, he goes, you know what? Fuck you, David Bowie. I don't need you, right? And he did in an interview, Morrissey said, I walked off the tour because I would not kneel at the altar of Bowie. He was a fucking prima donna. He was an absolute prima donna.
Well, he may have been a prima donna, but he was a rock god. He was a rock god that at that time was in a state of decline.
Yeah.
That creative arc that we had talked about, where he was so relevant and produced so much great, he could not really lose or miss in what he put out in the 70s.
Yeah.
And even in the early 80s. The 80s,
yeah.
But beyond.
Well, those
beyond
albums that, carried him through the 80s. Definitely carried that, him through the 80s.
Beyond the Let's Dance album, right? So the Tonight album, Living with the Aliens, and he did a couple of other. What was the movie that he did where he was in the costume? It was like the big maze movie.
Oh, Labyrinth. Labyrinth.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also did The Man Who Fell to Earth, which was fucking weird. That was a weird movie.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that now you're going back into the 70s. The point that
Labyrinth was the 80s.
The point that I'm making is after the Let's Dance album, he struggled. He struggled creatively. Yeah. And he never really regained, like he never really had that big comeback album. You know, like Let's Dance was kind of the comeback album. And yeah. So, you know, so that's, you know, 82, 83, you know, name another, you know, David Bowie album that was a huge hit.
Other than Black Star.
And was not.
That was really probably his biggest album after.
Yeah, know, but not really a huge hit, and probably more influenced by his death than anything else.
Yeah.
If you think about it, right, like the really last big David Bowie song was the one you picked a little while ago, was Blue Jean.
Yeah.
He didn't really have any giant hits after that.
From 84.
And the funny thing is if you actually look at, like, in terms of, like, Grammy Awards and his, you know, him charting, you know, his songs getting on the charts, he did not have a ton that ended up on the charts. Like, if you look at the highest grossing, most popular, you know, David Bowie songs. His remake of Dancing in the Streets with Mick Jagger, which is a horrible, horrible song.
I like Under Pressure better than that one.
Yeah. It's like number four in terms of the success that he had. David Bowie was definitely, he was an album oriented kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I said, what did I say? Diamond Dogs. What do you got?
I will pick. So I have to go with Space Oddity. You know, the Space Oddity was the first, right? So Space Oddity was my introduction to David Bowie. My parents used to play it.
Right.
You know, so it was one of those, you know, classic songs. Like if you go back into the early 70s, you had a lot of singer-songwriters out there that were actually writing songs that were stories.
Yeah.
You know, like Jim Croce was a story guy. And I know one of your favorite people, Harry Chapin with Cats in the Cradle and that type of thing.
I like Harry Chapin. I hate that song.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that Space Oddity is on par with Jim Croce or, you know, Harry Chapin, but it had that kind of theme. There was kind of like a story that was,
you could follow,
you know, and there was a lot of drama and there was a lot of mystery into it, especially for a little kid listening to it. You know, Can You Hear Me, Major Tom? Like you weren't really sure what happened to him.
Not until Scary Monsters came out. And he told everyone Ashes to Ashes, right?
Which is another great song.
Yeah, we know Major Tom's a junkie. That's when he finally came out and said it. But the thing about Space Oddity is this. Very few songs, very few performers can pull this off where they actually put you right in the moment of the song. Like, you can visualize what's going on when that song is playing. Right.
Yeah.
There's no like Bruce Springsteen lyrics that none of them make any fucking sense on their own, but they sound good together. Right. Space Oddity, you were there. You were in that capsule. You were at ground control. Right. You were listening. You were watching the countdown. You know, it was just it's one of those rare songs. It's very hard to pull off.
But that was my introduction to David Bowie. And, you know, and that's one of those songs that I've never gotten tired of. You know, even when it comes on the radio today, I still listen to that song. You know, it has a special
place. The short version, though, they always cut out like the guitar in the middle of it. They really, like if you're listening to the radio version, the radio edit, it's like they cut out a big chunk of that. And then it just ends with, "Can you hear me, Major Tom?" Like, all right. I guess because it's probably like a 5-minute song, right? Close to a 5-minute song.
Yeah, it's a little long.
Yeah.
It's a little long. And you know what? Much like Sound and Vision, there's a pretty good intro there.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get in there.
So I'm going to go with From Station to Station, the Station to Station album, 1976, TVC-15. Great song.
Edgy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, love it. Love it.
You know, kind of edgy, kind of punky. You know, him kind of singing in that high kind of register.
Yeah.
You know, that is, you know, it's got a good beat,
got a good sound, the whole, it's just a great song. Oh, my TVC-15. Uh-oh, TVC-15. I'm telling you, I sound just like him.
I think that our audience really appreciates the fact that we're talking about these songs and we're not playing clips, but occasionally you sing a little bit of one, which is just a treat for all of
us. They won't pull the video off of YouTube if I sing.
I just want to say on behalf of myself and the three other people that are listening right now.
There we go.
Thank you very, very much for the effort that you're putting forth. Keep it coming, baby. What about Starman?
Yeah, that's a good song. Yeah, no argument.
By the enthusiasm.
No. Voice. I was going to say no argument. Yeah, no argument one. There. That's a good song. Do you want me to sing it?
Please. Come on, go ahead. Give it to me.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. I can't hit those high notes. It's late. It's late.
Even post vasectomy, can't hit them.
All right, give me a 10th one.
I just did. I gave you Starman. Okay. All right, I'll give you my 10th, but it's an obvious one, but it's absolutely one of my favorite Bowie songs. Always has, always.
Let me guess. Heroes.
No.
Oh.
I like Heroes.
That's a great song.
But even more so, one of the Bowie songs that I've always just loved is Young Americans.
There you go, buddy. Can't go wrong with that.
You know, it's got a little bit of everything. I mean, it's a
great
song with the piano kind of going right into it. You know, it's got great swing to it. It's got a great sax. It's got great, it's got great vocals. You know, you got a couple of, cute little things in there. I heard the news today. Yep. Oh boy.
And we all know that Luther Vandross was a backup singer on that album.
He was. That's true.
Yes, he was. Yes. He had some pretty good backup singers. There's some sort of documentary, I think, on that. That's part of a documentary, a Bowie documentary. And they see Luther in the female singers in the studio. It was weird seeing a young Luther Vandross.
Yeah.
Knowing that he was just going to blow up. He was just waiting to blow up.
But I'll tell you, one of the things that I love about the song Young Americans is that in kind of the toward the ending where he's just kind of like freestyling a little bit, right? And he's just kind of like singing over the background vocals and whatnot. And he's just kind of, it almost seems like he's improvising.
You ain't a pimp. You ain't a hustler. A pimp drives a caddy and a lady drives a Chrysler. Right?
Yep.
There you go.
All of that stuff I think is just fantastic. I just think that song has got great, great energy.
Fantastic.
It's an up song. It's just really uplifting. And I've always loved that song.
Huge. Big hit for him when that came out. So. Well, I think we hit our 10. You know what time it is now, buddy. Say it. This day in music.
Oh, God.
All right. I'll be fast. I know Jack loves this part. All right. Hey, you know what? There's no Buddy Holly in it this week. There's no Buddy Holly. There's no Beatles either. Imagine that. All right, February 8th, on this day in 1964, with Louie Louie by the Kingsmen under FBI investigation for containing obscene lyrics, the song's publishers offered $1,000 to anyone who could definitively distinguish the dirty words. Good call. On this day in 1968, Band of Joy, featuring John Bonham and Robert Plant, made their first London appearance. Supporting Edwin Starr. Whoa! Huh! Good God, y'all! Right? Are you even listening to me? At the Marquee Club in London, England. On this day in 1973, Max Yeager died of a heart attack at age 53. He was the owner of the dairy farm in Bethel, New York, in which Woodstock took place. On this day in 1975, Bob Dylan went to number one on the U.S. charts with his 15th studio album, Blood on the Tracks, his second U.S. number one album. The album has become one of Dylan's all-time best-selling studio releases with a double platinum U.S. certification by the Recording Industry Association of America, and I won't buy it.
Oh, that is such a great record.
Anyways, on this day,
Tangled Up in Blue, and one of my absolute favorite.
That's my favorite Dylan song. I do like that song.
You like Tangled Up in Blue?
I love Tangled Up in Blue, yeah. Another one of those songs that puts you right in the story. Puts you right in it.
The song after, the next cut on that is Simple Twist of Fate. Fantastic song.
I believe you.
What? Blood on the Tracks is a great record. That is something that you should really listen to. Have you ever listened to it all?
No. All right. On this day in 1980, the divorce became final between David Bowie and his wife, Angie. He won custody of their son, Zoe, now known as Joe. Angie received, get this, she received a $51,000 settlement. That's it. That's all she got. 51 grand. Yeah. On this day in 1981, REM made their first ever recording sessions at Bombay Studios in Smyrna, Georgia. Tracks included Gardening at Night, Radio Free Europe, and Don't Go Back to Rockville. That's a good song.
Did you ever get to see those guys live?
I didn't. I was in the military serving my country while you were back home smoking dope and bad-mouthing us.
I was in a dope smoker.
Anyways, drinking beer and bad-mouthing our country. Something like
never.
That. I don't know what the saying is.
Never.
On this day in 1983, this is interesting. Winners at the second annual Brit Awards held in London included Paul McCartney, who won Best British Male Solo Artist, Kim Wilde, We're the Kids in America, right? Kim Wilde won Best British Female Solo Artist. Actually, you know what? Check it out. There it is. Kim Wilde. I got the 45. We're the Kids in America. See, I got it. Okay.
She sure was pretty.
Moving on, huh?
She sure was pretty.
She was hot. All right, let me see. She won the Best British Female Solo Artist, Dire Straits, including David Knopfler. We can't shake this group. 3 weeks in a row, 3 shows in a row. We got Dire Straits shit. It's diarrhea at this point.
Hey, it's David Knopfler. No. It's supposed to be Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler. No, my name's David.
Okay. So, Dire Straits, including David Knopfler, won the British group British Breakthrough Act. All right, they won Best British Group. British Breakthrough Act went to Yazoo. International Act was Kid Creole and the Coconuts. Best-selling single in 1983. One of the greatest one-hit wonders of all time. One of my favorite songs, Dexy's Midnight Runners. Come on, I think. I love that song. I still love that song.
Have you ever listened to that whole album?
No. All I listened to was that song because the rest of the album is horrible.
I was absolutely convinced that Dexy's Midnight Runners, that there had to be other good things that were on that record. There really aren't.
Yeah. No, we talked about that. It's like Smash Mouth.
Getting back to David Knopfler, I know that there was that whole controversy where he was mad at the people at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because they wouldn't pay his expenses. So he said, screw you, I'm not coming. Do you think that anybody there went, oh my God, what are we going to do?
What are we going to do? Oh,
what are we going to do? David Knopfler is not coming. How can we go forward without David Knopfler?
Exactly.
Maybe we can have Art Garfunkel sit in his seat.
that's a good coin toss right there. That's a coin toss.
Poor Art Garfunkel.
Yeah. On this day in 1990, this is a sad story. Suffering from depression, American singer-songwriter Del Shannon died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. It says there self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Like he shot himself more than once. That's not a good way to go. Oh, fuck, I missed. I got to shoot myself. It grazed myself. I can't even do that right. It's hard enough to do it once. I got to do it twice. Anyways. He scored a 1961 UK and US number one hit with Runaway, plus 9 US and 12 other UK top 40 singles in 1963. This is interesting. He became the first American to record a cover version of a song by the Beatles. His version of From Me to You charted in the U.S. before the Beatles did. Now check this out. Did you know that Del Shannon had been working with Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, and was rumored to be replacing Roy Orbison, who had recently died in the Traveling Wilburys?
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah.
I wonder if that had all panned out, if he would have stuck around a little longer.
That would have been pretty interesting, you know? But you can't replace Roy Orbison. I mean, he was...
No, of course not.
On this day in 1992, one of Jack's favorite songs, one of his favorite acts, Right Said Fred, started a three-week run at number one on the single shot with I'm Too Sexy. Can you play that on your guitar? I'm too sexy for my song. Too sexy. Anyways.
I don't even know. I don't even know how the melody goes.
Yeah, anyways. Don't fake it. You know that song. It's on heavy rotation in your car.
I know the song.
I'm too sexy for my car. Too sexy for my car. Yeah, baby. See, I am like cooking tonight. I'm cooking. Yes,
and you know that song. That's wonderful.
Yeah, because it did not 3 weeks at number one. Okay, on this day in 1994, Oasis. Yeah, this is typical. So you said that they were mortified at the Black Crowes, right? The brothers fighting. On this day in 1994, Oasis were forced to cancel their first foreign tour after they were deported from Holland. The band was involved in a drunken brawl on an across-channel ferry, resulting in the members of the band being arrested and locked in the brig on the ferry. I didn't know ferries had brigs. I guess they do in Holland. And finally, born on this day, Vince Neil, 1961.
Come on. Give us more, please.
No, I won't sing it. I won't sing any Motley Crue. I was going to. But...
They're playing two nights at Fenway Park this summer.
Don't go see them. You'll be extremely disappointed.
Have you seen what Vince Neil looks like lately?
Yeah, he sings like he looks. Let's put it that way.
He's in pretty rough shape. I would imagine with all of the money that's on the line on that tour that they probably have him locked away with a trainer. If they don't, they really should.
Yeah, his voice is horrible, dude. Horrible.
His voice was never really that great live.
Yeah. No. It's screaming. That's all it is. Yeah. It's screaming.
Were you ever a fan?
I was. Yeah. Absolutely, I was.
So can we take 2 seconds? Give me your top three Motley Crue songs.
Looks That Kill, Dr. Feelgood, and I do like Girls, Girls, Girls. I hate their version of Smoking in the Boys' Room. Hate it.
Yeah, that's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks to Kill, though, was very... The video, they took a big chance because people were starting to say, oh, what are they trying to do, Kiss? Are they trying to be like Kiss? Because they were the first ones to kind of put, out of these hair metals, put, like, you know, makeup, not girl makeup, like Kiss makeup on their faces.
Yeah, yeah.
It took a chance.
So for me, it's... Home Sweet Home. No, you know what? I'll say Looks That Kill is a much better song.
Yeah.
Wild Side.
Wild Side's good.
And Kickstart My Heart.
Yeah. You know, again, can't argue with it.
You talked earlier about, you know, David Bowie with the riff on Panic in Detroit. I love the riff in Kickstart My Heart. You know, just crunchy, edgy guitar.
I love the beginning of Dr. Feelgood. That's Nikki Sixx. He owns the beginning of that song. That bass is just roaring.
Well, I only got to see those guys once, and they were actually opening for Ozzy Osbourne.
I saw them on their first reunion tour in Fort Lauderdale. It's a pretty great show, man. It was a pretty good show. That was like, I think that was the early 2000s. Tommy Lee put on a show. He was hoisted to the top. He was swinging around the top of the fucking arena, playing drums over here, playing drums over there. That dude was no joke. He could put on a show.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. That was a good show. A lot of Bowie.
I'm going to go.
Yeah, you got things to do, buddy.
Settle into bed and to go listen to Bowie.
There you go. All right.
By the way, you ever see... You know the series Flight of the Conchords?
Oh, so underrated. So fucking funny.
Dude, the Bowie episode? Kobe in space.
You know what? I'm going to rewatch that series. That shit was so funny. If you don't, the humor is very, you have to have a taste for that humor. Very dry, witty, intelligent humor. But that shit, I'm a rhinoceros.
The Bowie episode is just the best, man.
Yeah.
Get an eye patch, man. Get an eye patch.
If you've never watched Flight of the Conchords, I think it's on HBO Max now because it was an HBO series. That shit is funny.
Those guys are hilarious.
And they're talented.
Do you like penguins?
Those dudes are talented.
Penguins.
Yeah.
Bowie All right, in space, Jack, man. Bowie in space.
Once again, buddy, thank you for giving me your time. I know your schedule is packed. Find time each week to do this. Jack is a busy man, whereas me, well, I lived a life of leisure. And I can wait for you, Jack. I can wait for you. And for everyone listening, thank you for listening. You are the engine that drives this machine. Without you, it would just be me talking to Jack, and well, that's old. Anyways. No comeback on that?
Casey Flan. Who the hell is Casey Flan? Spotify needs to ban you guys for being boring.
But he seemed to watch the whole fucking show, idiot.
I don't like
Evidently,
it.
He stuck it out.
He's banned he go from back the show. And,
let me see. His first comment was all the way back at, like, I don't know, 8:22. Yeah. And what time is it now? It's 9:30. And he's still watching. So... evidently, our boringness is entertaining to you. Anyways.
You know, you try to get creative and put a little love out into the world, and you just have people that criticize. They have.
Oh, he's just a miserable. I love. It's not his name isn't Casey, but he's a miserable bastard. That's all there is to it.
He's a great off guy,
but he's a miserable bastard.
He's a miserable prick.
Yeah. It's all. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week. And see, Casey Flan, see at the very end. That's because I love you, Scotty. See that? At least he ended on a good note. He doesn't love you, though, Jack. All right, everybody. Good night.